How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside the great Joe Rexrode from The Athletic. And it's SEC Tournament Week here in our city beginning tonight at Bridgestone Arena. And the Kentucky Wildcats coming in as the favorite. And to help us talk a little bit more about that, we bring in our good friend Jerry Tipton from the Lexington Herald Leader. Jerry, how are you doing this morning? Thanks for coming on with us.
Yeah, I'm doing well. Good morning.
So, Jerry, obviously, before we get started on the basketball front of this, the coronavirus has been a very popular topic of conversation, not only in our country, but in the world of sports as well. And the SEC announced yesterday that the locker rooms will not be able to be accessed by the media at the SEC tournament. What's kind of been your reaction as you've seen not only the SEC, but a bunch of different sporting leagues try to figure out the best way to handle going about this coronavirus stuff?
Well, just from a personal point of view, I was disappointed that the media won't be able to go to the locker rooms just because covering Kentucky, we don't have access to the locker room during the regular season. So it's a nice, you know, that's one of the many reasons why the tournaments are fun, that you get to go there and talk to a player and, you know, you get to know them a little better, get to develop story ideas you might have that you might not be able to during the season. But it's obviously understandable that with this virus, that precautions are being taken. I have my editor ask me to do a story yesterday about it. And it was an educational thing, just kind of checking around the country with various events or classes like at Vandy being canceled. And I saw something on CNN.com where the NCAA's head of their medical staff, he sort of likened it to like a tropical depression heading towards the country, and you don't know whether this thing is going to be a Category 5 storm or, you know, it'll just be a, you know, just a regular storm. So we'll so I can see a reason to take precaution.
Well, yeah, and that's a good point, Jerry. And, you know, some CDC recommendations and history tells us, and Italy tells us, you know, that, you know, the large crowds, that's where certainly, you know, this virus can multiply just because you've got a lot of people, you know, in very close quarters. And
right.
That has been, you know, something that has helped something like this spread. No indication, you know, it looks like we're going to have fans in the building this week. I personally think there's a real chance that changes for the NCAA tournament. What's your belief right now on where we're headed for the big tournament?
Well, I think you're right. I think there's reason to wonder about that, certainly. I read where Stanford, they're allowing fans, but on a limited basis, so the fans can be separated from each other. They won't be just, you know, right up against each other. And that's an interesting way to think about it. And I saw where maybe you guys saw this, the Ohio governor tweeted out that he didn't want, his state doesn't want fans at indoor athletic events. And, of course, we're talking Dayton, the first four in Dayton, and then Cleveland is a first weekend site. I haven't seen anything about the NCAA's response to that. I sought that yesterday, but I didn't get anything. And so, you know, obviously it's not going to be the same event if fans aren't in the stands. Fans play an important part in the environment and in making the tournament what it is. So it would be very odd not to have the fans. But, yeah, I think you have to err on the side of caution. That's just an opinion, but so we'll see. I mean, I don't know. I don't think the NCAA knows at this stage, but it sounds like a very fluid situation.
I mean, just imagine, you can hear everything Cal yells during a game. You can just, like, you can quote everything he says during a game. It'd be, you know, it'd be kind of fascinating, right?
Well, it's interesting because sometimes during the NCAA tournament, in the regular season, our seats at the Rupp Arena for home games and for the away games are kind of at a distance. Certainly at Rupp Arena they are. We're at the bottom of the upper deck. But at the NCAA tournament, you know, the media sits closer to the court, and I'm right behind the bench. And it's interesting, you can hear, you know, you can certainly hear some things, and the feeling I get is that not just with Kentucky, but with basketball in general, that it's sort of organized chaos, that the coaches don't have nearly the control on what's going on that I think sometimes fans think.
Jerry Tipton on the line with us from the Lexington Herald Leader. And Jerry, obviously it was announced yesterday, Emmanuel Quickley named Player of the Year in the SEC, John Calipari named Coach of the Year. How would you describe the coaching job that John Calipari has done this year to be able to get Kentucky to the spot they're in heading into the SEC tournament?
Well, you know, it's kind of business as usual in a way. He's done very well. I don't think anybody would argue that, although some Kentucky fans probably would. they're pretty much every year, and this year is no different. I think it helps them that there was no dynamic team in the SEC or in the country. And so, they've had a knack for pulling out close games.
I think we're losing Jerry here on the phone line here.
Try to get him back.
Yeah, we'll try to get Jerry back.
Get a better connection.
Yep. But I agree. I mean, John Calipari, Coach of the Year. It's looking like, you know, business as usual in Kentucky. I mean, I think a lot of people looked at this Kentucky team and maybe they say it's not quite as talented as they have been in terms of the elite level talent of freshmen that they're bringing in, but maybe a little bit older this year, maybe a little bit more prepared to deal with an NCAA tournament coming up, and certainly I think they're heading into the SEC tournament as the favorite.
Yeah, and he's done a really good job. They've gotten a lot better. I would have voted for Calipari for Coach of the Year. I know at least one vote went to Jerry Stackhouse.
Yep.
From Mike Wilson, my friend at the Knoxville News Sentinel, who actually texted me the other day. We were talking about it, and I sort of tweeted it, and he actually tweeted his explanation, and he's been ratioed pretty well for that. But Calipari, I think, is the right choice.
Absolutely, and we have Jerry Tipton back on the line with us. Jerry, sorry about that, and we were just asking about Calipari being the Coach of the Year and the coaching job that he's done this year for Kentucky.
Well, I'll get right to the point. I think Kentucky is good, but just good by Kentucky standards. And he's done, you know, just like every year, he's got the knack for bringing in various players from with individual agendas and meshing them into an effective unit. And this season, you know, has been more of the same. And I think he takes a lot of pride in player development. And Emmanuel Quickley is an example of that. And Nick Richards is. I was looking at it yesterday. The two of them combined last year didn't average 10 points a game. And this year, of course, Quickley is SEC Player of the Year, and Nick Richards was first-team All-League. And I think that speaks to the kind of development that players can make at Kentucky, and John Calipari heads that.
Yeah, and I mean, Nick Richards certainly could have, you know, had a case for Player of the Year, too. Speaking of, you know, individual agendas, Jerry, Ashton Hagans, what is going on with him? It sounds like, you know, he's back and everything. I mean, was this just it's like a personal thing aside from basketball, or, you know, not being happy with his role? And what do you think it goes from here with him?
Well, we don't know. We don't know a lot about what exactly is going on. And when John Calipari's been asked about it, he has kind of gone. He hasn't said specifically what is going on, but he has quickly transition to how these players are under a lot of pressure, and you know they're basically you know, their families and other people are looking for them to cash in as NBA players, and they like have the responsibility for being the breadwinner, for changing the lives of people in their families. And so, you know, if a player isn't playing well, if he's having problems, you know, it can compound the pressure. And we're sort of left to draw our own conclusions, but it would seem he was talking about Ashton Hagen, and he just needed to get away from it for a game. And so we think that's what's happened. And we were, you know, John Calipari has spoken optimistically about him, you know, feeling better and moving forward his old self. So we'll see.
Well, that's big for Kentucky, because initially I was like, oh, man, this could be bad. Because, you know, with Hagen's, I guess I probably thought maybe offensively he'd take another step this year. But, I mean, you know better than I do, Jerry. I mean, he is so important to what they do defensively. And for them to make a run, you feel like he's got to be in, you know, to be on the floor for this team. With Hagen's, if he's back and he can quickly, you know, get himself back involved and playing well, running the team, leading that defense with Maxey and quickly, and you mentioned, you know, Richards and even Montgomery, some, you know, Juzang, some of these guys coming on. Do you think this team is Final Four quality?
Well, I think because one factor to consider is that there's no mega team out there. So, yes, I think Kentucky is a contender to do that. I think there are a lot of teams that are contenders to do that. One of the things that makes me pause is that Kentucky hasn't just dominated opponents. Every game since January 3rd, the margin was 7 points or less going inside the last 7 minutes. And like 16 games all season. They played 31. It's been like 26 games have been like that. And like 16 or 17 of those games, something like that, it was a one-possession game inside the last 6 minutes. And I think that, you know, you're kind of walking a tightrope there. And you can fall off the rope like they did against Tennessee at home last week. And so it's a dangerous way to live. And every game's competitive. And, you know, we've just been conditioned to expect that. And, you know, I think they're capable of winning six of those, but it's not going to be an easy thing.
Jerry Tipton from the Lexington Herald Leader has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Jerry, thanks so much for coming on with us this morning. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. SEC tournament starting tonight, Joe. It's going to be interesting to see what Kentucky's able to do this week.
Yes.
And what they look like, because they get wide open.
It is, and it, you know, very, very possible. Noon Friday, little Tennessee-Kentucky rubber match.
Yeah.
They both won on each other's home floor. Last year they played an unbelievable semifinal game, so that could be a ton of fun Friday if Tennessee beats Alabama Thursday.
When we come back, SEC tournament play begins today, but we're looking around at other leagues and other situations going on being affected by the coronavirus. What does this the next couple of weeks look like in terms of the future of college basketball? We'll get into that next. You're listening to Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was Jerry Tipton from the Lexington Herald Leader joining us in the last segment talking about what's the future going to look like here in the next couple of weeks for the NCAA tournament in terms of how they handle the coronavirus. We've heard, you know, the SEC tournament beginning today. They're closing off the locker room access to the media, very similar to how they've done in the NHL. The NBA, Adam Vingan last night at the Preds game in Montreal tweeted out a picture of kind of the new policy going on right now in the NHL, where basically they brought out Roman Josi on like this block, this podium thing, and let him stand on there, and there was like a rope that separated him and the media, and he was probably 6, 7, 8 feet away from the nearest media member. And going to be a similar circumstance at Bridgestone Arena this week at the SEC tournament. Joe, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens, because we've seen some leagues across college basketball. The Ivy League canceled their conference tournament. They're just going with their regular season champion in Yale. I mean, I think the MAC and the Big West are playing without fans in the building. It's going to be interesting to see what happens as this continues to evolve here, especially with the NCAA tournament right around the corner. I think there's a real shot that at least some of these games are going to be played with no fans in the building.
This whole thing has now got me pretty fed up, Robbie. You know, just the conversation around this. It's like every single thing has to somehow devolve into like left versus right.
Yeah.
You know, and here we are again. So it's like you've got some people like, the flu kills way more people. This is nothing. You're all panicking. Okay, fine. That's and then, you know, like Dan Wolkin's a friend of mine. He does a really good job for USA Today. He wrote a column, the NCAA should cancel the tournament, which to me is, I disagree, and I think it's overreacting. And his point was, what if one player has the virus and then they go and then now you give it to another player? Well, again, like if that is how you look at it, then honestly, no one should do anything.
Just all stay at home.
No one should
quarantine themselves.
Yeah, like, I mean, I don't think they should. I don't think they will cancel the tournament. But listen to scientists and doctors. Don't listen to people who think of this in political terms. Or, I mean, honestly, we can sit here and blab about it. I'm going to defer to people who know science. And there have been other viruses, of course, that have killed millions, and that's not what this is. But what you see with these situations is if you have large gatherings of people, it's like you're just multiplying it. You are going ding, 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 ding. And now all of a sudden, a case here, a case there becomes case, 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 case. And then they go out. I mean, it's kind of logic. It's kind of common sense. The idea here is to stem the tide and to slow this down and not be Italy. We don't want to be Italy. We don't want to be in a few weeks where it's like, oh, crap, we have to lock everything down because we had all these, you know, we started to have cases and then we didn't take measures to slow it down. And so now look at where it is. And I understand the death rate's not high. And if you're a young, healthy person, it's probably not going to kill you. Also, like, I have a 92-year-old grandma in Florida who has some good years left and is in great shape, and this could kill her. So, like, we're just going to dismiss elderly people? Right. It just kills old people. Who cares?
Yeah.
I mean, do you not have any old people you care about in your life? I mean, to me, like, why wouldn't we want to be safe with this? I'm not saying cancel everything. I think the Ivy League overreacted and just canceling the tournament. It's too bad for, you know, those athletes who work so hard, and I think playing in front of no crowd is, I think that's reasonable. I think that's what is likely to happen in the NCAA. And frankly, if you listen to the scientists and not like your belief based on your political views, I think that, you know, it makes sense to cut these crowds down or take them out altogether for a while.
I wonder, look, this is evolving every day and new policies are being made. I know Vanderbilt shut down their classes basically for the rest of the month. I think Belmont is doing the same thing. So it's going to be interesting to see how this continues to evolve. But, like, you know, this is Wednesday. This SEC tournament's not going to be over with until Sunday. I mean, there's a chance, I would guess, that we may not make it all the way through Sunday before something's done about crowds. Like, it's probably unlikely, but I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah, I mean, I'm my mind is open to anything. I'd be surprised by that, I guess. You know, what's going to happen is, like, the ACC tournament is going on as normal. Like, the Mid-American Conference has taken the crowd out. We should probably try to get an updated list here on who all is doing what. No indication of any change here in Nashville. What's going to be interesting is, and I think the NCAA is going to hold off as long as it can. You know, and look, we saw with Columbus, Robbie, the Blue Jackets, you know, the Ohio governor's like, don't do this. And then they were like, we're doing this.
Yeah.
We'll have crowds. Some aren't, some will. It'll vary. But what's going to happen with the NCAA is I think they're going to be looking very closely at after, you know, these gatherings in certain areas, day after day of all these people being close together, all this stuff. You know, what does that do? Do you see an instant impact? Do you have more reported cases off that looks like it was related to that? I don't know how quickly you can get that data, but I know the NCAA is certainly going to hold off as long as they can. It's a ton of revenue you're talking about forfeiting if you don't have crowds at your games. But if it is obvious that, you know, this is doing what scientists say it will do, then I think that's gonna be the decision. And I think, again, like, understand that, like, the flu kills more people and the death rate is not big and a lot of people are just going to have symptoms, but you also have to consider what you're doing to hospitals, because now everybody with a cough, not everybody, but some people with like a cough are going to go freak out and go to the hospital because they think they have coronavirus.
Right.
And so now you're straining all that stuff too. And so if you now have more actual cases and you multiply them with this, what's that going to do to the system? You have to take that into account too. It's not just, oh, everyone's going to die. No one's saying that. But it is a deadly virus. Let's be real here.
Got a text in on the text line that says, what about Preds games with no fans? I mean, that's going to be interesting to monitor because, you know, you mentioned the Columbus Blue Jackets. They said, you know, we're going to play Thursday night as scheduled, Saturday night against the Predators as scheduled, despite the Ohio governor coming out and saying he would rather that not be the case. You know, at some point, if you're these teams and these leagues, I mean, and you start getting into going against what your local government is saying, I mean, you're opening yourselves up at that point to maybe some litigation, like if something goes wrong. So that's something that you've got to consider as well. Look, I don't know what's going to happen here locally in terms of the Predators and their games and, you know, what decisions the NHL may or may not make in terms of playing with fans. I don't think the NHL knows right now how exactly they're going to handle this situation, but I'd be lying if I said I hadn't thought about what it may look like in a couple weeks when the Predators are back home from this road trip. Maybe they do have a situation where they have to play a few games with nobody in the building. I mean, we don't want that to be the case, obviously, especially given where they are in the playoff race right now, but I think that's certainly on the table in terms of possibilities, not only with the Predators, but I think league-wide, the NBA is considering moving some of their games to like a neutral site because they're playing in cities that have been affected by the coronavirus. So I think there are a lot of things on the table right now.
Well, like the Final Four in Atlanta, they've already talked about, you know, maybe they'd move it to like Georgia Tech's, you know, just small basketball arena because it's just going to be, if it's just going to be staffers and media and bands. Interesting thing is you think about like, so these college basketball games, if they're played with no fans, but then the bands will still be there, which is interesting, you know, sort of just playing.
Prime time,
playing,
baby.
Playing for the players, I guess, you know, playing for TV. But canceling, yeah, like the idea of canceling, all due respect to Dan, you know, like again, like if you're worried about a player getting to this player over here, an individual case here and there, seriously, then just shut society down. I mean, you can't do that. That's too much.
Yeah, I find that to be probably the most unlikely scenario as we move forward here. When we come back, have the Tennessee Vols finally acquired some depth at the quarterback position? They had spring practices get underway. We'll talk about that next. You're listening to Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was Tennessee head coach Jeremy Pruitt talking about year three under his tenure heading into spring practice and where the program is right now. Welcome back into Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Joe, there is starting to be kind of a different vibe, I think, around Jeremy Pruitt and his program there in Tennessee. Obviously closing the season out the way that they did on the winning streak. I think there's a lot of excitement heading into this season for Jeremy Pruitt and the Vols. And, you know, the more he's been able to recruit, the more he's been able to build that roster in Knoxville, there's some pretty good competition there as well this year. I think for the first time, Jeremy Pruitt is going to have a lot of, maybe not a lot, but some significant depth at key positions as they head into training camp this fall. So it's going to be interesting to monitor this year. I mean, I think he feels really good about the trajectory of his program and the way they're trending right now.
Yeah, this is going to be the most hyped and anticipated Tennessee season since 2016, when Tennessee was actually the favorite to win the East and should have won the East and lost to South Carolina and Vanderbilt late and even, you know, lost the division to South Carolina and lost the Sugar Bowl with the loss at Vandy, but and kind of the beginning of the end for Butch Jones. But this is going to be a very anticipated season. I think this offensive line for Tennessee could be special. And obviously, in this league, you got to have everything in this league. You know, if you want to be a player in this league and in this sport, you got to have it all. But the trenches are so important, and so the offensive line looks like it'd be special. really good running backs and a lot of talent on D. And I think the defense, that's Jeremy Pruitt. That's what he does. You've seen pretty significant steps in a couple years there. The question still to me is, do they have enough up front? But I really like, certainly their back seven, and they got a chance to be a special team, a really good team. Let's say that, a really good team, like an 8-win plus team. Quarterback is going to be the question.
Yeah, and speaking of quarterback, it seems like the Vols are starting to develop a little bit of depth at the quarterback position. Jeremy Pruitt talked about the competition at quarterback after spring practice. Here's what he had to say.
We've got good competition there. So Jarrett's a guy that has played a lot of ball, and I think if you look at all three of those guys, they there's a lot of positives that they do. Okay, we've got to eliminate the few mistakes that we've made over the last year, and with another year in the system, that's something that we're working on. We've got a couple of other quarterbacks in that room, Harrison Bailey, Jimmy Holiday, Kasim Hill. They're taking the same amount of reps too. So we've got good competition because we got to figure out who our first quarterback is, who our second quarterback is, who our third quarterback is, and they'll get a chance to do that throughout the spring. I think that's every position, right? In this business, it's you're only as good as your last game, right? Whether you're a coach, whether you're a player. So there always needs to be competition so everybody will be at their best.
And I think there's some realistic competition this year at the quarterback position. We saw kind of how it went for the Vols last year. Garantano was the starter. Then he wasn't. He was coming in off the bench, playing really well, coming in off the bench. JT Shroud at one point, Brian Maurer, even though he dealt with some injuries and some concussion issues last year, was the starter. And now you've got Harrison Bailey coming in there as well, his highly touted freshman. There's some real depth at the quarterback position, and it's going to be interesting to see how they handle that. And Jeremy Pruitt talked about that as well in terms of the repetitions and the competition going on at quarterback. How's he going to handle that as they move forward? Here's what he had to say.
Well, the plan right now is to rep six guys. If there's a point in time that we feel like that maybe somebody eliminates theirself, then obviously we would get, whether it's five, four, three, whatever it is, right? But we're going to continue to work for a group. So there's going to be lots of opportunities, for throws and to kind of create some chemistry on the offensive side of the ball. So we do that every practice, and we practice like that in our scrimmages. So these guys will get plenty of opportunities this spring.
Plenty of opportunities for quarterbacks at Tennessee. And, Joe, this is probably the most depth they've had at that position in as long as I can remember. I mean, it's been a long time since the Vols have had this many quarterbacks kind of battling it out in spring practice and heading into fall camp as far back as I can remember.
Yeah, I mean, repping six guys is like, really? I mean, that's a big
number.
And we
all know that's – once they get into fall camp, it's going to be three, four guys at that point.
So you got Jimmy Holiday and then, Kasim Hill, Maryland transfer, really interesting, like a big recruit. I don't know what the plan is with him, but those are the five and six. JT Shroud, I think, will be somewhere else next year. Right now, he's technically number two. Maurer is interesting to me. Brian Maurer, he's going to be overlooked because it's obviously Garantano. Garantano is going to be the starter starting the season. I'm quite confident in saying that. Now, am I confident in saying he'll be the starter all season? And at the end of the season, I'm less confident in that. He's got to keep it. He's got to play better. He had some high highs and some low lows last season, and I thought he was done after Florida. And hey, credit to him, he came back and really responded. But the bowl game kind of showed you again. Garantano, he's got to get better. It's got to be better at that position if they want to do what they think they can do. The guy who's going to get all the attention and everybody's just going to go gaga over every throw he makes during the spring is Harrison Bailey.
Yep.
And here's the thing. He's a five-star freshman, and we see here and there, we see a Jake Fromm come in, and he's, that was an injury to Jacob Eason too, but he's the guy. He's ready. He's a starter. Trevor Lawrence – you'll see guys sometimes who are ready as freshmen to come in and be difference makers at quarterback. Way more often, they need a year to redshirt, to sit out, to get used to college, get used to doing laundry, to, you know, to understand about the huge difference in reading a defense and making your adjustments with your receivers, with your protections, all that stuff, from high school to SEC football. It's a massive difference, and that's where Garantano has a huge advantage on a Harrison Bailey. Harrison Bailey is going to be a focal point, and look, I keep an open mind on it, but also keep an open mind on maybe he's not even close to ready when the fall comes. Maurer, to me, I really like Maurer's ability. I like his moxie. I think he's got to be more, you know, he's got to be more accurate. He's got to be more consistent. You know, you saw he came in for Garantano in the bowl game, and mm-hmm. I mean, he tried to throw like three picks in like five passes. Yeah. You know, it's like, whoa, man, ease
up. Even the Mississippi State game last year, like, he was playing really well, and then he had those two throws where he's like scrambling to his right. He throws it completely across his body on the other side of the field, and it's like the easiest interception in Mississippi State history that happens at that point. So he's able to make these plays and getting out of the pocket and being, I guess, for lack of a better term, one of those gunslinger-type quarterbacks that he's not afraid to try to push the ball down the field and make the big play. But there are also a few throws last year that he made where you're just like, dude, like, you can do that in high school. You cannot do that in college football, especially at the SEC level. And that's kind of the next step for him, is you got to be able to recognize when it's time to take a risk down the field and when you just be like, hey, just throw the ball away.
Yeah. And look, so he's the starter still. I mean, you at that point, as they went to Kentucky last year, you're like, hey, Maurer, I mean, you're going to have growing pains, but clearly he should be the starter. And that's what I thought. And then he just played his way out of it, and Garantano comes in and plays great in the second half and takes it from there. And good for Garantano for being ready. And even really, Garantano played well at Alabama other than
the calf.
The switch at the line at the goal line. But Maurer is he's going to be overlooked because obviously everybody knows about the senior who's going to be the starter. And then you know about the hot shot freshman. Everyone just can't wait to see everything he does. But Maurer could make a huge step as a player because, yeah, those things you talk about, that's young quarterback stuff. I think he's got a lot of ability. So I'm still, like, to me, I'm keeping three people in mind here as people who could be on the field playing quarterback for Tennessee in the fall for various reasons. And I still think if Maurer takes his step and he gets it and is pushing, it could be Garantano, Maurer, and
Bailey's the three.
Bailey's redshirting. Yeah. But again, it's like you also have to look, if you're the Tennessee coach staff, you're watching this spring, you're like, yeah, like, this guy, he's not going to be here all the way. He's that good. So then maybe you just want him to be active as a freshman because, you know, like, it's the idea of redshirting him doesn't matter that much. I don't know if he's that good or not. And they may not know based on spring. But a lot of times you get once you see a guy every day up close, you kind of have a feeling for where things are going to project.
Yeah, I mean, no question about it. And we're going to get into a little bit of this when we come back on the other side of the break. Wes Rucker from Go Vols 24/7 will join us coming up next. First, 102.5 The Game is your local donation station. We're accepting donations to help in the tornado disaster relief efforts. The Nashville Community Resource Center is in need of the following items: tarps, roll plastic, hand sanitizer, laundry detergent, work gloves, and trash bags, just to name a few. The donations can be accepted Monday through Friday from 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. here at our studio, which is located at 1824 Murfreesboro Pike in Nashville. To see the full list of items that you can donate, visit thegamenashville.com/donations. We'll be right back here on Morning Drive with Wes Rucker from Go Vols 24/7. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic taking you through this Wednesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. Joe, it's going to be interesting to watch Tennessee this year in terms of the expectations that get set for their football team as the fall comes around, because, look, I love watching the Tennessee Vols play. They've been a part of my life in terms of my college football consumption for years and years now. But expectations have a tendency around here sometimes of maybe getting a little too much out of control in terms of the way that fans operate. What do you think fair expectations should be for the Vols as they head into this upcoming season?
I think the expectation should be that they go 8-4. Well, I think a good season, you're happy if you're a Tennessee fan, if they go 9-3. You want them to start making it a regular thing to beat the other East teams they should beat.
Yep.
You know, and that's South Carolina, Missouri, Kentucky, Vanderbilt. You take care of those games. They took care of them last year. And then, you know, you've got four really tough games on the schedule. Unfortunately for Tennessee, or fortunately if you love the rivalry, you know, right now it just doesn't work out well for them that their protected game from the West is Alabama. But so you know you got that every year. You know you have Florida, Georgia every year, and they also go to Oklahoma. Take care of the other games. You're going to be favored, I believe, in all the other games. And then get one of those other ones. And you're 9-3. That's a good year. Anything beyond that is, to me, a fantastic year.
Yeah, no question about it. Well, to help us talk more about the Vols, we bring in our very good friend Wes Rucker from GoVols247. Wes, thanks for coming on with us this morning, man. We appreciate it.
No problem, guys. What's up this morning?
Not a whole lot. How are things in your neck of the woods?
Not too bad. Not too bad. I'm actually about to head over y'all's way, so.
Very nice.
A little hoops today.
Got your hazmat suit, buddy?
Ready to roll. Ready to rock.
Got your little mask on and stuff?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, and, you know, for those of us who travel all the time, this is not scary at all. So, yeah, that's good.
That's right. So, Wes, we were talking in the last segment about Tennessee's spring practice beginning, the competition at quarterback, Garantano there, Maurer there. Obviously, Harrison Bailey garnering a lot of attention coming in as a freshman. Is this maybe the most depth that Tennessee has had at the quarterback position in, gosh, probably the last 10, 15 years?
It's got to be up there, you know. And it's gotten to a point now where in college football, it's like there's too many of them, you know. It's what a quarterback room kind of used to look like. But now in these days where if you don't get the job, you're kind of transferring – it's a lot. And to be honest, if they have this same exact number going into preseason camp, I'll be kind of surprised because that's just not the way things go in this era. But, you know, Tennessee's got five scholarship guys, and then they've got a sixth guy who's pretty much as good as a scholarship guy in Kasim Hill, who was a starter for a couple of years at Maryland and beat Texas twice. So, you know, they've got some pieces there. Now, are any of them going to be just studs this season? I don't know. I mean, Bailey might have the most upside, but Garantano is certainly the most experienced. Maurer's really exciting. You know, there's this freshman, Jimmy Holiday, who is the best athlete they've had at quarterback in a while. If he sticks there, probably since, guy, you'd have to go back years, maybe to Schaefer. So, I mean, they've got a bunch of different options, but are any of them going to be great? Now we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I'm focused on three guys here, Wes. And obviously, Garantano, and, you know, I mean, I'd like to know if you agree with me. I think it's strong favorite to be the starter for the season. I feel really good about him starting when the season starts. I don't necessarily feel as confident about him always being the guy on the field. You know, I think he's got to keep the job. Obviously, everybody's going to be so obsessed with Bailey right now. I'd like to know what you think about him early, but also is Maurer, I look at Maurer as a guy people are going to overlook because, you know, you've got the senior, you've got the five-star freshman, but I think Maurer's a guy who could take huge strides, and I thought showed some really good stuff last year and also showed his youth. What do you think about those three guys?
Well, you know, those are probably the three best guys to look at right now. And Bailey, I'll tell you this much. The first thing that stands out is he's a lot bigger, I think, than people think he is. Maybe it's because he's just young. People don't think of a young quarterback being big. But, I mean, this kid's probably 6'5", 225 almost, something like that. Now, he's a really big kid, and he throws a really nice ball. He certainly looks sturdy in the pocket, and he's a decent runner. In terms of overall upside, you know, he hadn't done anything yet, but in terms of overall upside, it's hard to say he doesn't have more upside. You know, this team, all things equal, someone's going to have to beat out Garantano because they know what they've got there with him. And, you know, the devil that you know might be better than the devil you don't know. And they got some tough games early in the season going to Oklahoma so early. you know, that probably does put Garantano right in the driver's seat. And you know, he's just a guy that's always kind of, he's got so much experience. And I know people don't want to hear that, but I still think he's kind of the guy to beat. And then with Maurer, you're right. I mean, Maurer is really, really exciting. He has an ability to do things that, you know, just kind of wow you. And then he's also got the ability to make you go, ugh. You know, he should have had so many more turnovers than he actually had last year. He had a lot of balls that should have been intercepted, made a lot of mistakes. But he also made some of the best plays of the season. So, yeah, those are the three guys to watch. I think, you know, I wouldn't discount some of the others necessarily. But, yeah, if you ask me right now, gun to my head, Garantano is probably the guy going into the season because someone's going to have to really, really impress to beat him out. Because if all things are equal, probably go with the guy you know. But those are the three guys to watch for sure. And I'm really interested to see Bailey this spring.
Wes Rucker from GoVols 24/7 on the line with us. And, Wes, obviously the SEC basketball tournament starting today here in Nashville. Tennessee puts together a run at the end of the year, beating Florida, beating Kentucky, obviously falling short, disappointing the last game against Auburn. What did you make of their basketball season as a whole this year, and what do you make of the SEC tournament, their chances going in?
You know, there's only a couple teams in this SEC tournament I just don't think they can beat. I think one of them is Auburn. I just don't think – we've seen that game for 3 years, right? They just – it's weird because, you know, John Calipari tends to do okay against Bruce Pearl. Rick Barnes does really well against John Calipari, and Bruce Pearl almost always beats Rick Barnes. So you kind of got a weird, you know, trio there at the top. That's just kind of how things go. I think with everything they've been through, I don't think it's a terrible year. I really don't. You know, I was more bullish than most going into the season because that's how strongly I feel about Lamonte Turner. I think he's one of the best leaders and toughest dudes I've ever been around. Without him, that changed this season a lot. And I'm not saying that it's been a great season because it hasn't, but I think people are kind of overstating how bad it's been. I think when you look at that Turner loss, they are about where they should be in a lot of ways. Now, next season, there'll be no excuses. They need to be really good next season. They need to be right there competing for every championship. But this season, everything that's going on, I don't think it's the worst thing.
No, I'm with you, Wes. I mean, so much has gone on with these guys, and I agree with you. Turner, special intangibles and a special ability to hit that big shot, too. You know, obviously before the shoulder made it so he basically couldn't shoot. You mentioned Bruce Pearl. Interesting thing he said after the game Saturday, you know, talking about all that Tennessee went through, but then he's like, basically, like, you know, they have an issue at point guard. And he was talking defensively, of course, and we saw it in that game. I mean, you know, Vescovi, and we've seen it other times. I mean, he is struggling right now to keep guys in front of him. It's hard to hammer someone who, you know, was at an academy in Australia in December and all of a sudden, you know, starts, at, you know, a few hours after getting to town, it seems like. But what do you think is his upside? Like, can he get himself? Is he the point guard moving forward of this program? Can he get himself with a great off season and strength and all that to the point where you can feel okay about him against some of the best guards in this league defensively?
You know, there's going to be a couple issues with Vescovi and Pearl going forward, I think, and I don't think that they're insurmountable issues, but I do think they're real issues, and that's that Vescovi kind of plays the game at more of an NBA point guard's pace. You know, he's not rushed. He is quick getting up the floor sometimes, but he's not lightning quick getting up the floor sometimes. And he's a good athlete, but he's not a burner. And Rick Barnes wants his point guards to play fast, really, really fast.
Like Jordan Bone.
Yeah, think about it. And even Turner getting up the court too pretty quick. I mean, they want to get up there and get a shot either in the first 7 seconds or work the half court offense and then go from there. That's going to be an issue. And the other thing is, you know, they really, when they get to play defense the way they want to, it's 94 feet in your face the entire time. And that's just not something Vescovi athletically is equipped to do against some guys. I will say this, their strength coach, Garrett Maidenwald, one of the best in the business. I do think Vescovi, given a full off season, will be a different kind of athlete. And if, you know, I go back to Lamonte Turner, who was not a great defender early in his career, was willing, but not a great defender. And then he just got quicker and more explosive every season. And eventually he got there. So that those are going to be issues, but I mean, they love Vescovi as a player. Maybe he plays more off the ball, and they put someone like B.J. Bailey at point guard next season, the transfer from Oregon.
I think we lost Wes there.
I still think he has NBA point guard upside, but I don't know how quickly he'll move.
There he is. Wes Rucker, ladies and gentlemen, from GoVols 24/7, has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Wes, thanks so much for coming on with us, and we're looking forward to seeing you in our great city this week, my friend.
No problem. Be there in a couple hours, boys.
Absolutely. Wes Rucker from GoVols 24/7 has been our guest. When we come back, it was a big win last night for the Nashville Predators against the Montreal Canadiens. We'll get back into that. Also talk about the SEC basketball tournament beginning play this week at Bridgestone Arena as well. You're listening to Morning Drive live from the Wholesale Inc. studio powered by RumbleOn.com here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.